Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Now it's Venezuela's turn. The global war on terror has been rebranded as the hemispheric war on narco-terror. Trump calls himself a peace president, but pursues forced regime change in Venezuela. What could possibly go wrong? Crosstalking Venezuela, I'm joined by my guest, Diego Sequeira in Caracas. He's a writer, investigator, and an award-winning journalist. Also in Caracas, we have Sierra Pascal Marquina. She is a political science professor and author. And in Bogota, we cross to Camila Escalante. She is a Latin American correspondent. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Diego, let me go to you first. You're in Caracas. Are you preparing yourself for forced regime change, some kind of military strike by the Americans? I mean, they've given you a foretaste. They don't like speedboats. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You have like two levels here of movement. Let's call it this way. First, you have like the actual mobilization, everything regarding national defense on one level, and on a more daily level, it's like nothing. People are not expecting anything in the sense that they're just about their lives, daily lives as usual. So it's a funny situation in which you have both, let's call it extremes of regarding daily life in Venezuela. That's one of the current things. So, which means, I think it's an important thing here, there's no actual, any kind of social breakdown or any, you know, public meltdown or people mobilizing in order to overthrow the president in order to avoid this situation or anything. Nothing of that sort is happening. People are actually more focused as is usually the case on getting, you know, bring bread home and also preparing for the holidays, which is basically sacred here in Venezuela. So that's actually the spirit currently right now. There's no, if you walk around, you're not going to see anyone telling you, are you expecting the gringos to attack or anything? Nothing of that sort is happening.
You know,
so it's quite interesting in that sense.
Yeah, and that's why I asked, because I hear there's no toothpaste or toilet paper and all these stories. You know, I mean, all the social strife and all of the other vulgarities that they like to talk about countries they don't like. Sierra, in 2019, oh, remarkably, it was Donald Trump that attempted a coup in Venezuela. The man's back, and probably more perniciously, he has Marco Rubio as his wingman now. And I don't want to be crude or anything like this, but is Venezuela coup-proof? Because it didn't work out too well in 2019.
Well, basically, Venezuela, the Bolivarian process, has been under siege by U.S. imperialism for over the past 26 years. So every U.S. administration since the very beginning of the process has attempted to overthrow the democratically elected government, this process that is based basically on popular sovereignty. So I think that that's important to understand how people are taking the current situation. As Diego was saying, indeed, in Caracas, the situation is very calm. And this is actually a victory for the people of Venezuela and for the Bolivarian process. But it is also true that under the situation of maximum pressure, there is also maximum preparation. In other words, the people of Venezuela are also preparing, are committing to the defense of the homeland and of the project. And I think that that's the most important thing. There has been a long history of sabotages, coup attempts and coups, of different, of course, a very intense economic war against the people of Venezuela. So that means that people are actually prepared. But this is another level. This is another level of aggression. This is another level of intensity. And that means another level of preparation as well.
Yeah, but your enemies are preparing well. Apparently, this Nobel Peace Prize winner is ready to step into power. I mean, what a disgrace the Nobel Committee is. It finally rendered it a worthless prize. Camila, I read government reports. I like to find out what they're thinking. It was only a few months ago, actually, that the intelligence community in the United States didn't put Venezuela into the crosshairs of narco-terrorism. Remarkably, over a few short weeks, I didn't know that Venezuela is the center of all of this. I mean, if you read U.S. government reports, it says this. And people that wrote those reports were fired. You had an admiral was fired recently, most likely because he didn't like what the administration was going to do, because this is a complete fraudulent policy. Camilla, keep going.
It's completely fabricated in the last months. It's always been like this. We've seen this in the case of Bolivia. We've seen that these drug reports by the United States are always politically motivated. But RT did an interview within the recent weeks with the former UN drug chief, and he himself said that Venezuela has never factored in any real way into the major drug and crime reports around the world. Those are produced by the DEA, of course, some things by the State Department, and most importantly by the UN and the EU. It's just a fabrication to be able to, like Sierra said, intensify and expand these operations against Venezuela. But even in the short time that I've been following Venezuela, we've seen a drone attack carried out against President Nicolas Maduro in August 2018. We saw the Guarimbas carrying out acts of terrorism in the street. And we saw a prior military buildup that was staged from Brazil, from Colombia, and even from Guyana with all the different so-called exercises going there, and even drills in Argentina. So it's not the first time that we've been through this. And actually, it's getting a little tired. And people on the exterior got really excited about covering Maria Corina and her Nobel Prize. And a lot of the alternative media, some of my colleagues, they rushed to characterize her and draw up a profile of who this opposition figure is. I didn't. Why didn't I? Well, because during the time that I've been following and covering Venezuela, we've had different opposition leaders being imposed on us as the supposed leader of the opposition, the next person who's supposed to take power. It changes every 6 months. It's really hard to keep up with. And quite frankly, it's going to be someone else in the future.
Diego, what is going on here? Because there seems like a hemispheric reordering. Now, we all know, and I don't want to belabor the point, but I mean, what is it? The Western Hemisphere so far from God and so close to America. These machinations are not new, but it seems like the Trump administration wants to start with Venezuela, then Cuba, then Nicaragua, and the trifecta there. I mean, they have big plans for the hemisphere, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, we can just conclude right now that this is never has been a matter of drugs, of narco-trafficking, or the truth, for that matter. This is about, of course, regional reshaping, as you said. This is Marco Rubio's plan, even beyond Trump. I think Trump could even settle with something in between, in midway of this, where we are right now. And it goes further. And of course, even ideologically, inside the Rubio mindset, this is about Cuba. I mean, Venezuela is the strongest link in what Bolton called, you know, coined the Troika of tyranny in the region. And of course, there's also this usual neoconish post-Reagan fetish about domino effect and everything that has to do with that kind of very poorly conceived game theory.
Yep.
And yes, I mean, there's also, talking about Rubio, Rubio is probably the most thoughtful about the awareness of U.S. decline currently and what are the reasons of this and what, according to Rubio, needs to be done. I mean, there's a full body of literature, legislative, and also articles and so forth that Rubio has been writing for the last 10 years regarding these two situations, which involves, of course, first, the regional reshaping in order to be able to set up finally, and this is something I've been repeating constantly, but I think it's like the most functional way to define this, which is a hemispheric wall regarding the Asian century. That's basically it. And this is why it involves all the reshoring, re-industrializing, bringing corporations back.
I'm in complete agreement with you, Sierra. It's interesting that was recently reported behind the scenes, of course, is that Maduro was willing to negotiate with the United States and actually make quite a few concessions, particularly when it comes to Venezuela's resources. And it was a big fat no. They want the whole thing. They don't want to negotiate. They don't want a partner. This is a pattern here. Go ahead, Sierra.
Well, First of all, that comes from a New York Times article, a supposed leak, but a leak to a writer that actually is known to be doing a PSYOP operation. So I would first of all deny that there was this offer. But the truth is that they do want it all. They want it all because there are several things that are a problem to the U.S. in relation to Venezuela. Of course, we all know that Venezuela sits on the largest oil reserves in the world. But it's not just that, because obviously Saudi Arabia has very large oil reserves. So it is about Venezuela having a sovereign project, and more than that, a sovereign project that looks towards the global south, that actually has a socialist horizon via the communes. Awesome. And these are the real...
Okay, I think we have Sarah kind of froze on us here. All right, let me go to Camilla right now before we finish up here. Camilla, we're going to end the program in a few seconds, and when we come back, I want to ask you a question about, well, what if there is a military strike against the government in Caracas, and what would be the regional effects? But before we do that, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Venezuela. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Venezuela. Okay, we have Sierra back. I'm glad you're back with the program here. Now I want to go to Camilla. Before the end of the first part of the program, I asked you about a possible military strike. One of the strategies that the U.S. has for forced regime change, the most recent iteration, of course, is Syria, where they were, because of the sanctions and the immiseration of the population and state officials, they were able to bribe a lot of the military to essentially not to resist the takeover of Syria. Camilla, could that happen again? Could that happen in Venezuela? Bribing? Extorting, or is the military firmly behind the government?
So far, the military is firmly behind the government. They've been carrying out, the United States has been carrying out covert operations in Venezuela for as long as the Bolivarian Revolution has been around. They have tried to buy off every single person around President Nicolas Maduro. It's not to say that it's impossible, but they have failed to even get low-level soldiers to really defect in the ways they wanted to when they were carrying out those Cucuta operations to try to force in so-called humanitarian aid. And it's a little bit difficult. It's a little bit loud. I'm not sure what I'm hearing here.
Okay, but I can hear you just well, and that was a very good answer. Okay.
Okay, well, let me continue.
Okay, keep going.
Allow me to continue.
Please.
In essence, it would be, theoretically speaking, some sort of a civil war, because we have millions of people as part of the National Civilian Militia who are willing to fight back. That's beyond the Bolivarian National Armed Forces, the military of Venezuela, which is much stronger than the military in many of our countries of Latin America. So they're very powerful. They have the United States is seeing right now what capacity the Venezuelan military has. And as I heard Diego say in another interview, they're testing the waters. We're not sure that this is going to result in some sort of a strike. They're seeing what level of compliance some of the U.S. allies have in the region. They're trying to coerce some of the U.S. Close allies to see what they're going to do, what they're willing to do for empire. And they're looking to see who needs to be punished. And that's where we come back to Bogota, where they're issuing sanctions against the president for speaking out against what's going on in maritime waters.
Diego, what is this all about? Because, you know, this is always pitched, these regime change projects are pitched to Western publics, in this case, the United States specifically. But is it ideological? Is it resource-based? Because, you know, it's very tiresome 30 years after the Cold War. They're communists. They're socialists, okay? It's a bit stale, okay? And I think that's why they picked up on the narco-terror thing, because that's something that people understand in the United States. It's not Venezuela's problem. It's not exporting it to the United States. Other countries are. I mean, but how is this pitch here? Is it ideological? Is it geopolitical? Great power politics? Realignment of the entire hemisphere due to resources, or would there be an allocation like Venezuela would be the oil producer, Argentina would be agriculture? I mean, is this the kind of reordering we're talking about?
Indeed. I mean, it is, I mean, you can see there's three things here. First, it is ideological in the Southern Florida sense.
Okay, good. I like that. Yeah.
That would be the militant manifestation of this ideology. Then, of course, it has to do with resources, as you said, and with regional realignment, as we are saying. But also, the whole thing about making this a criminal case, it's a procedural element. The paradigm shift came precisely after Operation Gideon, that you might remember was this, they call it the Bay of Piglets. Operation because of the failure of this attempt of bringing in some mercenaries and some nationals also to overthrow the government. But it's clearly now how it works. You can see Trump saying, no, I don't see the need to declare war because we're not talking about a state. We're talking about a criminal structure. And that's basically it. I mean, it's also a way to just make sure, and this is also, I think, Rubio's thinking a bit, a neocon, because William Barr was the one who actually did the paradigm shift. To say this is technically, this is not a war against the state. It's a security matter in a moment that they conceive everything Latin America as domestic policy. So that's basically how they frame it.
Yeah, everything always gets down to national security. We can't tell you. You have to trust us. It's all about national security. Sandra, one of the things that I've been thinking about here is the United States doing this out of conviction and strength or out of weakness? Because the global South, what they want to do is they want to kneecap the global South in the Western Hemisphere. I think that's one important aim that they have, because the global South is flexing its muscles. It's developing a very compelling narrative all around the world. It's not necessarily directed against the West, but it certainly wants to get away from the West. Donald Trump doesn't want you to go away.
Well, yeah, I think that that's very important, actually. Look, actually, when you look at the actual slogan of MAGA, Make America Great Again, it is actually a recognition that the U.S. is losing ground, that the U.S. is not the hegemon. So they actually are facing a problem. It is a real problem, and they are looking for pathways to solve this problem. Of course, Venezuela has always been a problem for U.S. imperialism. It has always been a problem since the beginning of the Bolivarian Revolution. As I said before, I think I got cut off by power outlets here. But the thing is that right now, it's not just about Venezuela. When we look at the current situation, at the current military buildup, of course, Venezuela is the center. There's no doubt about it. But it is also true that they are going also against two progressive governments in the continent, against Colombia and against Mexico. So basically, they are trying to reorganize the sphere. That is their object. And they are trying to reorganize the sphere, the hemisphere, because they have recognized that they are in trouble. There's actually a Politico article that came out about 2 weeks ago. It was based on a leak. And it basically, the leak says that the State Department, the national defense strategy is shifting towards the continent. Why is it shifting towards the continent, towards the hemisphere? Because actually, it doesn't mean that China or Russia are not a problem for the U.S., but China and Russia are in the continent. They are in the continent, and, well, the U.S. thinks that it has the prerogative, as we all know from the Monroe Doctrine, to have control over the continent. So that is why there's this new focus on the continent. Of course, I have to highlight again that there is a strategic problem for the U.S. in relation to Venezuela for two main reasons: one, oil, and two, its sovereign project.
Yeah, Camilla, it's too bad Russia can't have its own Monroe Doctrine. It's too bad China can't have its own Monroe Doctrine. How is this going to shape the region, Camilla? I mean, politically, socially, because I agree with what Sarah said. I think the United States feels that it's losing its hegemony, and this is a reactive one. Unfortunately, sanctions and the military are only tools that they have in their toolbox. But is it going to work, okay? I mean, obviously, the United States, with its economic might and military might, can cause a lot of trouble, a lot of chaos. As a matter of fact, you can say that has really been the history, particularly of American foreign policy since the end of the Cold War. It can mess things up. It doesn't fix things very often. They can mess things up, though. Go ahead, Camilla.
Well, if the objective of the United States is to try to bully countries and governments into servility, to try to get people to comply with whatever project they're trying to carry out here, I'm not sure it's actually going to work that well. I don't know if anyone has spent any time on the internet lately, but if you see what the Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago is doing in allowing her territory to be used for this military buildup and aggression, and even false flags and operations directed by the CIA.
And the killing of her own citizens.
Precisely. If you see the comments underneath these news stories and her own tweets, people are absolutely dogpiling her. They don't like what is being said and done by that government. And there's a lot of pushback from around the entire Caribbean and Latin American region. So it's not really working out in terms of public opinion, but it's also not working out, as my colleagues have said, with the other main progressive governments of this region, which are saying, absolutely not, this doesn't work for us. People are getting killed. These are extrajudicial killings. And you can't just go around claiming that people are drug dealers. And by the way, no U.S. journalist or anyone has any idea. We don't have a log to see who these individuals are and what they're being accused of. Just in the case of when these people were shipped to the Secot in El Salvador, we don't know what supposed cartel they were being accused of working with, just that they were criminals, but none of this information was released to us. The same thing is going on now with the unreleased identities of these 60 people who have been killed at sea.
Yeah, and Diego, the Cartel of the Suns, that was a CIA operation. I mean, this is, again, a complete fiction. This was a creation of the CIA having to do with drugs being purposely imported into the United States. They wanted to find out who was selling it. And now all of a sudden it comes back like Christmas past. Last 60 seconds go to you, my friend Diego.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first time it appeared after the 90s, which was the moment that the Cartel of the Sun, because it was in singular back then, happened, it appeared in 2005, the moment that Venezuela expelled the DEA and stopped collaboration with the DEA in 2005. It was in a Miami Herald report quoting an undisclosed diplomat. Of course, it was William Bromfield, the current ambassador back then. Okay, that was it. So it's an off and on topic that appears according to the juncture, according to the moment, and according to the narrative they want to set.
Well, it's absolutely amazing to me that, you know, after the propaganda push to go to war against Iraq, they're trying it all over again. The difference is it's really, really sloppy. It's hard to believe. Mm-hmm. But just about every single narrative coming out of this narrative is equally hard to believe. But it's certainly dangerous. I want to thank my guests in Caracas and in Bogota. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.